All right, so we are holding on Mendez Omodez in about 12 wines from the top, winemaking zero shade. Okay, the last thing we discussed was we quoted a brisa that mentioned that a nida, a zava, a yeledes, a shemerosim kenegadiyim, all of them, they're matame b'fnim kibachutz, all of them, when the blood is still inside them, at once it's outside, the once it's in the bayit achitzon, as we defined yesterday, then they're already tame. So we asked, why do we need to mention yeledes separately? The fact that she's tame is a yeledes. Meaning, why do we have to mention nida and zava and then yeledes? A yeledes, the blood that comes out before the birth, either makes her a nida or a zava, as the case may be. So why mention it separately? So we ended up saying, the last thing we said was that actually we're not talking about blood at all. We're talking about it was a dry birth without blood. But we're talking about that the baby, once the baby's head is in the proizder, then already it's considered born for the purpose that already the mother is tame from the birth. So that's what we mean, the tame b'fnim kibachutz, that even though the baby's head is still inside, but because it's already out, it's already in the bayit hachitzen, it's in the outer part of the birth canal, then therefore it's already considered born.
Does that explain why it's
separately? That's why it's mentioned separately. That's the point. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's why it's mentioned separately. Not different passages, but in the Braisa, that it mentioned Nida, Zava, Shemeresiem, Kneged Yoim, and Yeled. So three out of the four of them it's talking about when blood is in the Bayis HaChitzen. And in the case of the Yeled, it's talking about when the baby itself, when the baby's head or whatever part of him is in the Bayis HaChitzen. So the Gemara continues, V'chi ha'huda osa l'kamei d'rova. As we have an example with So the last thing we said, actually, was something that Rav Oshia mentioned, that you have a situation where, even though you have a situation that we've learned about in Cholin, where the baby died in the womb and the midwife stuck in her hand and touched it, we said she's tummy. I, tuma blua, because it's still inside the mother. Rav Oshia says because the baby might have already had its head out in the proizer and it was already considered born for that purpose, and therefore it would be metamical. So the Gemara says, v'chiyahuda also kamei d'rov. As we have an example with something involving that, for a case of a person came to Rava with a shayla. Omele, he asks Rava, Mahu l'mimhal b'shamsa? Are you allowed to make a bris milah on Shabbos? Omele shafir dami. So Rava says yes, as we know that a bris bismana is doicha Shabbos. Bosa denofik, after the guy left, Omar Rava, so Rava says to himself, how is it possible this guy didn't know that? You can have a bris on Shabbos. There must be more here than meets the eye. Also, Basre, so he went and followed. He went out to find the guy and asked him. Omele, he says to him, Emily, easy. Tell me, easy. What was the actual scenario? Easy. We have in many places in Gemara. You have this expression, Emily, easy. Some of them, of course, explain that easy means now, and others explain that it means my friend.
Yeah.
So it could be either one. It could be tell me now, or it could be in fact. No, it doesn't mean now as in opposed to later, but just like a now, like a filler word, like you use in English, like you use the word then in English or so. In fact, the Rashbam, for example, actually, I believe it is in when you have in last week's parasha, and Parshas Toldos, when Esav comes in and wants the brachos, and Yitzchak realizes what happened, that Yaakov came first, he says, "Mi Eifoy hu asod sayid." And Rashi explains the word Eifoy is also like a filler word. So who was that then that came already? And the Rashbam explains that it's similar to this word easy in the Gemara.
Since you're mentioning that, I had a question. How come Esav said to his father, "Hani b'chersh
perach"?
He's per already. How can he claim he's a b'cher and lie to his father?
Well, I mean, he was still the born b'cher.
He was born.
Okay, fine, but maybe he didn't consider that important. I don't know. Whatever. The point is that he still thinks of.
He did not consider it important because he said in any case he's going.
No, to I don't understand, but I'm saying that's what I'm saying. He didn't consider the sale to be important. He figured, okay, you know, it was something I did when I was a kid, whatever. I don't know. All right, anyway, that's something to talk about another time. Anyway, okay. So the point is, so Rava says to this guy to tell me gufadu over the heichihava. What was the actual case that you asked?
Can I read it? Easy gufadu.
No, it's aimily easy. So easy either means tell me now, or it means tell me, my friend. What was the actual case that you're asking about? So the guy says like this. Shamis Vlad, I heard the baby crying. Apanya de Male Shamsa. in the evening on Friday afternoon, right before Shabbos, like during Bein HaShemoshim. Or maybe right before, right? So actually, the Shiltis, when it brings the story, explains that it was actually during Bein HaShemoshim, which was part of the question. But anyway, so he's saying, so it was right before Shabbos when I heard the baby crying, while it was still inside the mother. V'la'iskulid ad Shabbos. It didn't actually come out of her until it was already Shabbos.
He never mentioned that to...
Nah, so 1 second, so I'll tell you. So if you notice over here, the Aleph with parenthesis over here refers to Hagorif Ma'arav Ranchburg on the side, and he refers to something from a drosha from the Ra'anach. The Ra'anach was one of Rebel Yehu Ibn Chaim, was one of the early Achronim. So he writes, so let's finish learning the story, and then we'll talk about what the Ra'anach explains. Yeah, what was the guy thinking to not mention these details in the first place? Okay, so wait. So v'lo yiskele that Shabbos, the baby wasn't born until actually Shabbos. Amrle, so Rava says, oh, in that case, how could it be that you heard the baby crying before it was actually out? Hi, hotzi roshe chutz leprozer, must be that the head was already outside the prozer, because as long as it's inside the womb, its mouth is closed up, and it would be impossible for it to be crying, and it's also surrounded by the amniotic fluid, whatever, so you wouldn't be able to hear it crying. Well, that was exactly that too, yeah. So therefore, it comes out, as far as halacha is concerned, the baby was born on Friday, or maybe not for sure on Friday, but Bein HaShemoshim is the case, maybe, yeah. So therefore, v'havi mila shalei bizmana. Now, to do a bris on Shabbos would be a bris shalei bizmana. V'chol mila shalei bizmana ein mechal l'nalei Shabbos. So if it's not bizmana, you cannot be mechal Shabbos for it, which means, in other words, now, since we're saying that when they heard the baby cry with Bein HaShemoshim, it means they can't have the bris on Friday because it might be too early. They can't have it on Shabbos because it might be too late. So they have to push it off to Sunday. Now, so of course we have the question, so what was the guy thinking, not even mentioning the detail to Rava? So that Anach explains...
He didn't ask that question like that.
That's the thing. He only asked, are you allowed to make a bris on Shabbos? But Anach explains like this. This guy knew the basic halacha that you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos. But he figured like this. If we're going to say that it may be a common thing for the to take some time from when the baby comes into the prozer until it actually exits the mother, then we should say, as a general rule, maybe we shouldn't be making a bris milah on Shabbos because you always have a suffix. Even if the baby was born Friday night, let's say, it could have already been in the prozer sometime before that.
Before Shkia,
and then you wouldn't make the bris on Shabbos. So therefore, he just asks Rava generically. In other words, the point is, should we be concerned about such a suffix? And Rava just answers him flat out, no, there's no problem, you can make a bris milah on Shabbos, implying, in other words, that in general, we're not worried about such a suffix. So now, though, Rava thinks to himself, yes, but on the other hand, the guy must be more than here than meets the eye. So then he finds out. So then the guy explains the Shaila was, in this particular case, there was a reason because we heard the baby's cry to think that there might be a suffix that it was born before Shkia. So in other words, what comes out of the story is, in general, we're not worried about that kind of thing. In general, a baby is born Friday night. We don't assume that it came into the prozer, into the Bayis HaChitzen before Shabbos. Therefore, we assume that, therefore, we take it for granted that it was born, that it came out of the womb on Shabbos, and therefore that you make the bris on Shabbos. Only in a case like this, where you heard it crying, so that's the thing. So they're not going to explain. And the reason why the guy didn't mention that detail in the first place is because he figured that we need to see, in general, are we even concerned about such a possibility? And then once Rava told him that we're not, then he figured, okay, so maybe in this case I don't have to worry either, until Rava went and clarified it with him. Okay. Okay. So that's that.
So the answer is
you don't do the bris on Shabbos in that case. Sunday. You wait until Sunday, right? Okay. Ibaru. Now we have another question. Oisei mokim shal isha bolua havi e beis astarim havi. The oisei mokim, the woman's vagina, is that considered, if there's tumah in there, is it considered bolua, as if it's swallowed up in the body, or is it considered beis astarim, is it considered a hidden area of the body? The question is, l'mayin nafka mina, so what's the actual difference? The difference is, k'en shetoch v'alochavato kezayis nevela v'oisei mokim. Suppose another woman goes and takes a piece of nevela and sticks it in to the other woman in oisei mokim. If you say it's considered bolua, then havi tuma blua, then we say once the piece of tuma, the nevela, is inside her, so it's blua loy metame. So it's not metame her at all. Not the maga and not the maga.
How can it be blua when it can, come back out.
It can come back out, but fine. So what? We learned in colon about cases, for example, where a person swallows a tummy ring, for example, and then later on throws it back up or whatever. Yeah, I mean, you can have. Once tumor is inside the body, it's tumor blua, so it's not the tummy.
It's not in the mouth.
Right? It's the same difference. So the point is, it's inside, completely inside her body. So maybe we would consider it balua, and therefore it's not the tummy, not the maga, not the masa. The e-amid beta starting habi, if you're going to say it's considered a concealed area of the body, fine. Nehidra magala matamya, granted, then it's not matamya her by touching, the masa mia matamya. But nevertheless, it's going to be matamya her when she can't, with the fact that she's carrying it around inside her body. Because the whole concept of beta starting doesn't exclude masa. It only excludes maga, as the Gemara is going to explain later. So that would be the nakamina. So what's the din? Abaya oma balua habi, roba oma beta starting habi. Abaya says it's considered balua, so therefore she's not tomei at all, not the maga, not the masa. And Rava says, desa storim havi, so she will be tomei from masa. So it's true, she's not tomei from the fact that it touched her, but once she starts walking around and carrying it, then she's tomei. Omar Rava menam min Allah. So Rava says, where do I get this from? That's only desa storim. Tanya, we learned previously when we discussed the concept, when we were discussing the issue of pelatas shichvas zera, we were talking about when is it matame? Is it matame once it goes out into the bayit achitzin, or only when it actually leaves her body? We had the machlokas hachamim and Reb Shimon. And we said that Reb Shimon holds one way, the chachamim holds the other way. Fine. But we use the expression there. Why did the pasuk, Reb Shimon had explained over there, why did the pasuk even need to tell us about the concept that if a couple has relations, that they're both tame and that she needs to tovel? On the face of it, on the face of it, it's obvious. The reason is element nesha tumas beis astorim. We said because tumas beis astorim or tumas beis astorim la matamya. Usually a tumas beis astorim is not matamya. Elish exeris hakosavi. Just in this case, it's exeris hakosavi. But the shichas dera touching her inside makes her tummy. So you see from that, it's called beis astorim. It's not called tumah blua because the brisa doesn't say the element nesha tumah blua. It says element nesha tumas beis astorim. So you see, it's beis astorim.
It would be tumah blua.
That's the question. Abaya is saying it's tumah blua. Abaya would consider
it tumah blua,
meaning it's not even the tamei b'masa. So shichvas zera, it doesn't really make a difference because shichvas zera is not the tamei b'masa anyway. Shichvas zera is only the tamei when a person touches it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, over there, it's not really relevant. But over here, when we talk about a sheret, then it's relevant to know whether it's the tamei b'masa or not. So therefore, so you see that the Braisa calls it beis astorim. Abaya, what would Abaya answer to that? He would say, Chodagoid karma. The Braisa is actually telling us one reason plus another unexpressed reason. Chodag, the tumah blua. Number one, it's anyway a tumah blua, so really it shouldn't be matame at all. The oid, asilu, in pim saloma, tumah beis astorim, even if you were going to say that's not tumah blua, even if you were going to say that's only beis astorim, ain't a matame, really it shouldn't, by rights, it shouldn't be matame, shichvas zera insider, ela shigzer sakosuki. Rabbi would say the Braisa doesn't mean that it's only, the Braisa would mean it is actually Tumah Blua, but even if you're going to argue, like Rava does, that it's only Tumah Spesa Storim, even then you should say that it shouldn't have been Matame, and it's Zeris HaKosuv, and therefore the Pasuk has to. Well, the fact is, because the Pasuk says, the Isha Asher Yishka V'Yisar Isha Shifat Zera, V'Roch Tzeba Mayim, they both have to go to the Mikvah. So that's the Zeris HaKosuv, that she's Tomei from Shifat Zera, even though it's inside. Okay. So that's that. So Rava will take the Braisa at face value. Abaya will say that the Braisa is just mentioning the second half of the argument. But really the first half would be that really it's actually Tumah Blua anyway, and in that case it's not even relevant to talk about Beis HaStorim. Okay, as usual when Rava and Abaya argue the halacha is like Rava, and so it is over here. Okay.
And therefore
it is Matame B'masa. I don't know that it means, by the way, that masa necessarily means that she has to move around. The pashtus, it would just mean the difference would be if the other woman holding the piece of nevela or whatever just touched it to her insides versus actually left it in there.
The case of nevela?
Nevela we're talking about, which is metama b'maga and masa. So once it's left in there, then yeah. Okay. Ibarlahu. Now we have another question, a related question. Makam nivlas oif tahor. We've learned that a nivlas oif tahor is matame a person when he swallows it. That place where the nivlas oif tahor goes when the person is swallowing it, bolua havi a beis astorim havi. Is that place, the back of the throat, is it considered bolua or is it considered beis astorim? So again, the question is l'may nafkamina. What's the relevance of it la halacha? Either way, the person is tame when he swallows the nivlas oif tahor. The nafkamina is nafkamina kugin shetochav lechaver kezayis nevela l'seichpim. Suppose somebody else stuck a kezayis of nevela into his mouth. So nevela of an animal, not of a bird. Iam at balua havi. If you're going to say it's balua tuma blua lemitamia, then again it's not matame him because balua is swallowed up inside his body. Eli amet beis astorim havi, or my amet beis astorim havi. If you're going to say it's beis astorim, need him a maga lemitame b'masa miyematame. Again, it won't be matame just from touching him, but it'll be matame b'masa once the other person lets go of it and then it's inside his mouth and inside his throat and he swallows it. Or he doesn't swallow it; it stays stuck in his throat. Exactly. Yeah, whatever.
Regardless,
doesn't really matter. Rashi, by the way, points out in both of these cases, the reason why the expression is that somebody else stuck it in is because if the person themselves stuck it in, they were going to anyway be tell me from touching it. So therefore, we have to. So the Chacham Sofer, I think, talks about that and says, on the face of it, why do we have to say that? On the face of it, if they touch it on a stick, then they're not matame b'maga. But the answer would be fine, but they're still matame at the heset. They still moved it. They still were masa. They still carried it using the stick. Therefore, Rashi has to invoke the case where somebody else put it in. Anyway, so again, you have the same machlokas. Abaye alma balua habi, v'rov alma beis astorim habi. Same thing. Abaye says balua, so it's not matame the person, even b'masa. Rava says that it's beis astorim, and therefore it is matame b'masa.
One second. The tuma b'masa
means
the fact inside.
It starts when it's the pashtus. It starts when the other person isn't holding on to it anymore, and it's only being kept
even outside.
No, what do you mean even outside?
When he takes a stick.
Yeah.
And it's outside his body.
Well, obviously, then it's not masa. Masa, right. I'm talking about, in other words, so the other person took the stick with the piece of nevela on it, stuck it down the other guy, stuck it into the other guy's throat, and then let's go of it. So now it's inside the other person's,
right.
throat. He's noticed it. He's carrying it. He's carrying it. Therefore, if you say that tumas beis astorim, then he's still matama, because tumas beis astorim is not exempted from masa. So again, the same machlok, because Abaya alma balua habi, v'rova alma beis astorim habi. Same thing, Abaya would say that he's tohur, Rova would say he's tohur. Omer Abaya mena amina law. Abaya says, where do I get my opinion from? That is considered balua. D'tanya, we learn in a braisa, yochol tehe nivlas behema matama b'godim abeis abliya. You would think that the nevela of an animal should be matame a person when he swallows it. Now we know that only a nivlas beis tohur is, but we have to figure out why doesn't that apply to an animal. Talmud Leimer.
We learned it in Chulin and in Zochim.
So Talmud Leimer, therefore the Pasuk says, Nevela utrefa lo yoicha l'tamava. The Pasuk says, this is regarding Koyanim, that they should not eat Nevela and Trefa to become Tomei with it, meaning in other words, because if they do, then they can't eat Truma or Kodshim. So the point is, why does it mention lo yoicha l'tamava means mishe'en l'tuma el'achilasa. This din, that nevela is matame the person, by eating it, is only the kind of thing where the only tuma that applies to it is when you eat it. A nivla sotar is not matame when a person touches or carries it, only when he swallows it. Yotzazu, as opposed to an animal, shetmeya kodim sheichlana, where it's tumah even beforehand, so therefore you can't say on it lo yoichal l'tumah ba, because the tumah is not exclusive to eating. So the point is, in other words, that the point is that we see that the braisa was arguing that you would have thought that it's matame abeis abliya, and we're saying that not. So therefore, Rava says. So therefore, Abaye says. Obviously, it must be considered balua. So therefore, we're saying he's not tame at all. According to Rava, it should be matame b'masa. Okay, so the Gemara asks, fine, let's analyze the braisa itself. Granted, okay, we have the pasuk, that limits it to nivlas oftar, but the taste of a kavachomer in nivlas oftar. Still, why can't we use a kavachomer to say that it does apply to a nevela of a behema or chaya as well? Make a kavachomer. Uman nivlas oftar she'en l'tumah b'chutz. Madach a nevela of a kosher bird, where, as we just said, there's no other tumah outside the body. The only place where it's ever matame is when a person is swallowing it. Yesh l'tumah b'fnim, but it's able to be matame a person inside when he swallows it. Yet zush yesh l'tumah b'chutz. So this, a nevela of an animal which has tumah outside, ain't a din sheyesh l'tumah b'fnim. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that has a tumah inside?
It's a tumah nivra.
Yeah. So no, the answer is, it's not just that the Pasuk says nevelo trefa lo yoichal, it's also because the Pasuk says boh, omakra boh. The Pasuk says you shouldn't eat it to become tummy with it. With it is a mute. meaning with it. Bach v'loy ba'acheres. He only becomes tamei with it when he swallows it, not anything else, not an avail of an animal. Im kein matamad loy mevahoichel. So in that case, then what are we learning from the fact that the pasuk says by an avail of an animal that a person who eats it,
which is the same Bach.
Well, no. The question is, in other words, that the pasuk says that a person who eats nevela, the pasuk says that a person who eats nevela is tamei. Shouldn't we assume that applies to animals as well? So no, the answer is listen shir l'negev l'noisek ha'oichel. No, what it comes to teach us is that the shir for a person who touches or carries the nevela of an animal is equal to the shir of eating the nevela of a bird. Ma'oichel b'kazayis, eating is always, in halacha, eating is always defined as a kazayis, ach negev noisa b'kazayis. The same way, when it comes to touching or carrying a nevela of an animal, when does the person become tamei? Only if it was kazayis.
And you could not have deduced that from...
How else would we know? If anything, we would think maybe it would be a kabesa. For example, tumas oichel is only the kabesa. So you wouldn't know that it applies to a kazayis. So the word b'oichel doesn't teach us that a person eats a nevela of an animal, he becomes tamei, unless, of course, he touched it. But it has to be a minimum size, and that's what we learned from Vahoy. Okay, so that was Abaye's proof. Now Rava does not respond to that proof. So what does that mean? So the
for the shear?
Well, no. The thing we were saying about the shear was kind of a side thing. The main point was we had a braisa that we wanted to say that a person, we were arguing, we would think that a person who eats the nevela of an animal is tamei, and we're saying that no. So therefore, we see from that a person's not tamei from it. Apparently, not the maga, not the masa. So that would be like a bias, says. Many of the Rishonim, the Ran, the Ritva, the Ramban, others say that Rav, even though the Gemara didn't mention an answer from Rava to it, Rava might distinguish between the beginning of the Beis Abliya and the end of it. The beginning of the Beis Abliya meaning the beginning, the top end of the throat, and the bottom of it would be the so therefore, so Rava would agree, sure, of course, because in other words, there's a beginning of it and an end of it, anytime.
But it should apply
to okay, the no, because the din is, no, because the difference is, you could say that the beginning of the Beis Abliya is a place where a person could still relatively easily regurgitate it, whereas the bottom is not. So Rava would say, fine, of course, by the time when it gets to the bottom of the Beis Abliya, let's say the other person stuck it all the way into the bottom of the Beis Abliya, sure, that's going to be considered a Tumah Blua. I have no problem with that. I'm arguing that when it's at the top of the Beis Abliya, then it shouldn't be considered Tumah Blua, only Tumah Beis Astarim. And Rava would say, the Braisa is not addressing that at all. So therefore, according to them, Rava does have an answer to refute Abaye. He would say the Braisa is on a different part of the Beis Abliya. Therefore, the usual rule would apply.
Proof that the Beis Abliya is divided in two.
No, but we would assume that it has a top and a bottom. Yeah. So according to that way of looking at it, the halacha is like Rava. Again, as Rava versus Abaye, as it usually is. And that's how the Rambam paskins and most of the Rishonim say that way. The Ritva brings up another possibility, though. He says maybe after all we would say that in this case the fact is Rava didn't give an answer in the Gemara. So maybe in this case we would say the halacha is like a bayah. We say the halacha is only like a bayah in six cases, Yalkagam. The Ritva says maybe that would only be where a bayah doesn't have a braisa on his side here. Where he has a braisa on his side, then maybe that wouldn't be part of the general rule. Okay, that's a second explanation in the Ritva, but most of the other Rishonim, and including the Ritva himself, in his first explanation, say not like that. They say that Rav, most of them say the halacha is like Rav.
Another
genie. Omar Rava, speaking of Tumas Beis Astarim, Sheretz Bekumtoi Tahor. Suppose a person has a piece of a Sheretz in a fold of his body, like let's say, for example, in the crook of his elbow. And it's covered up. And it's covered up by his. It's covered. Well, that's what we're going to see. But in other words, so let's say he has a piece of it over here, and he has his arm. He has his arm flexed. So he's tahor because it's based on starting. A base of starting means any area of the body which is hidden. Which is hidden. It could be something that's always hidden. For example, the inside of Osin Makum, or the throat, or whatever.
That doesn't matter.
Right now, that he has his arm like this, then it's Beis HaStarim. If he were to unbend his arm, then it won't be Beis HaStarim anymore. So therefore, so he's tahor. Nevela bekumtai tomei. On the other hand, if there's a piece of nevela in the crook of his elbow or whatever, then he's tomei. Sheretz bekumtai tahor because sheretz benegia hu dematame. Because a sheretz is only matame a person when he touches it. Or beis hasodom lav bar magahu. The beis hasodom is not a place where a person can become tomei from something touching him. So therefore, in other words, so now, obviously if he put it on his elbow, let's say, and then he bent his elbow, obviously he became tomei as soon as he touched it. So we have to be talking about, in other words, that his elbow was already bent. No, not flew, it's dead, first of all. No, what we mean is, let's say, in other words, he had his arm like this, and somebody went and stuck a piece of the sheretz in here, let's say.
Okay.
Yeah. So then,
you could slide to his elbow and killed it. And then,
well, yeah, okay, I suppose that would be a possibility also, maybe, all right. All right, I don't think any of the sheretz can fly, but okay, fine. All right, let's see. Okay. On the other hand, nevela bekumtei tomei. On the other hand, says Rava, if there was a piece of nevela in the fold of his body, such as for example in his elbow or his armpit or whatever, then he would be tomei. Nihid v'magal matame. Granted, it's not matame him by touching v'masa mi matame, but it's touching him by the fact that he's carrying it, and the fact that he's carrying it because it's being supported. By the way. So that's the thing. That's what we're saying. That beis hasodom is impervious to maga, but not to masa. That's what we were saying before. That was the true machlokes of Abaye and Rava. Also, says Rava, another din, on the other hand, sheretz bekumtoi v'chnisse la'avra tamer. Suppose, let's talk about another case. Suppose this piece of a sheretz was in the fold of his body, but then he stuck that fold into the airspace of an oven. So in other words, again, he had the sheretz in the crook of his elbow, let's say, and then he took it, and then he does like this, and sticks his elbow into the airspace of the oven. Then tomei, then the oven is going to be tomei. Question is, the Gemara says pshita. Obviously, why would we think it's not? Yeah, he himself is not tomei from beis hasodom, but why shouldn't troma be able to go out from there and be the time of the oven? The answer is mau detema. You might have thought, without Rava telling us. The pasuk tells us that an oven or a kli cheres in general only becomes tomei from its inside, but not from toich toichoi, not from the inside of its inside. An example of an inside of the inside would be, let's say you have a keli. Hello. Let's say you have a keli in the oven,
right,
that where the edges of the oven, the edges of the keli stick out beyond the top, beyond the top rim of the oven. So you have here is an oven. You have a keli inside it where the edges of it stick up beyond the rim of the oven. So now suppose there's tumah in that keli. So now obviously the tumah that's at the bottom of that keli is somewhere within the oven as well. But the oven is not tumah because the tumah is inside the keli, which in turn is inside the oven, and that would be toast. That's only, by the way, if the rim of the inner keli is sticking out beyond the rim of the oven. If the entire keli fit inside the oven, then the oven would be tomei. Then we wouldn't say toich toichoi, because then what happens is the entire keli becomes tomei, and therefore, in turn, the tumah then goes out from it and spreads to the oven. We're talking about you have a larger keli, such as an oven, and then you have inside that a keli, which is smaller, which is narrower but taller,
okay,
so that the top edges of the inner keli stick out above the top edges of the tamei. So therefore, so the tumah is inside the inner keli, and it's the tamei, the entire inner keli. But then, when the tumah goes and wants to spread from the top of that inner keli to the oven, it can't, because there's no reason. It should be outside of the oven. It's not in the airspace of the oven. So therefore, so you would think the same thing over here, where the sheretz was inside the guy's elbow, inside the oven, you would think that's an example of toich toichai. The answer is kamash malon, so therefore Rava wants to tell us not so. And the reason why not so is because that concept of toich toichai only applies to a keli. Here it's not a keli. Here it's not a keli, it's his elbow, right.
What about the keli cheretz?
We're talking about a klicheres. So we're talking about, in other words,
he puts his elbow in a klicheres.
Well, we use a tanner as an example. A tanner is usually made out of the same thing. We're just using a tanner, an oven, as an example, because it's a large type of keli where a person might easily stick a body part into. Yeah. Okay. Amar Shlakish. Here's another din regarding beis hasodom. Kone bekumtei shel zav. Suppose that a zav has a stick in one of his body folds. So again, let's say he has a stick in it. He has a stick where one end of it is being held in the crook of his elbow, let's say.
And the other end is outside.
And the other end is outside, yeah.
So that's not in bed.
Hold on. Vihisit vayas tahor, and then he uses that stick to move a person or an object, which is tahor, then that other person remains tahor. So there's the zav. In other words, he has a stick like this, and he uses that stick, let's say he uses it like that, and he uses the other end of the stick to push somebody and make him move. The other person remains tahor.
And if it's tummy, it would be tummy?
If what's tahor? No, if the other person is tummy. No, well, then obviously the other person is Tommy already. That's not the point. No, neither. We're saying that the Zav himself is Tommy, obviously.
Oh.
But the fact that he used the stick, which he's holding in the crook of his elbow, to push somebody else, that does not make the other person Tommy. It doesn't make the other... Yes. We're going to see why. On the other hand, but if it was the other way around, suppose the Tahar person had the stick sticking out of the crook of his elbow, and then he used it to push the Zav, Tomei, then the person himself, the Tahar person, will become Tomei. The reason for that is because then, in effect, it's considered like he lifted up the Zav by moving him with the stick. It's considered that, in general, Tumas Heset, the Tumah of moving Zav something, a Zav is able to be metame a person with Tumas Heset. So one second. So now, well, the thing is with a Zav, it's actually bidirectional. Usually you have, whether a Zav moves something else or whether something else moves a Zav, then either way that other person or object is going to become Tumah. You have examples in the Mishnayos Zavim. You have a number of examples. One of them involves, for example, you have a Zav and another person on a seesaw or a balance scale or something. So whichever, no matter which one is heavier, the Keli or the other person is going to be Tomei on some grounds or other because they moved the Zav or because the Zav moved them. But here, because they were moved using a stick that was being held by the person's Beis HaStarim, then it's different. In other words, the moving was done by the koyach of Beis HaStarim. That's the key point. We don't care that the entire stick is not in Beis HaStarim. We care that the koyach that was used to move the other person comes from Beis HaStarim. So my time. So what's the reason? The pasuk says like this. V'chayla sheyiga boy hazav. Anything which a zav touches, or anything, or anyone, whatever, that a zav touches, the yodav l'shotach b'mayim, where he didn't previously wash his hands with water. Now, what does it mean to wash his hands with water? He doesn't need to wash only his hands. A Zav needs to go to the mitzvah to be tahor. So it means, Zehu hesete shol Zav. First of all, this pasuk is referring to something that a Zav moves. Shalom matzino le'b'ktumah b'chol ha'Torah kula. We never find anywhere else in the Torah that if a Tomei person causes something else to move, that other thing should be Tomei. You don't find only for Zav. You don't say, for example, that you don't
for
say,
Zavo.
Well, Zav. I mean, Zav means any of the ones in that category. Zav, Nidya, Yeledes, yeah. But you don't say, for example, that a person is Tommy Mess who moves somebody else without touching them is going to be the Tommy of the other person. So, Hesete means moving, causing them to move, yeah. But the Afke Rachmana Beloshin Megia, the pasuk instead of using the word Hesit or something to that effect, making him move, it uses the word Megia, and it uses the word that he touched him. Lememra the Hesit or Megia Kiyodov, and it uses the word Yodov. So we see from that when he touches and causes something to move, when is he Metameit? Only if it's something similar to his hand. Ma hosam me'avroi, his hands are exposed, they're not a hidden part of his body. Ha'chocha me'avroi, the same thing over here, any other heset that he does has to be with an exposed area of his body. So that excludes, for example, the crook of his elbow or other areas of his body like that. So that's why if he's holding the stick if he's holding one end of the stick in his elbow and he uses the stick to push somebody else, that's why the other person is not Tommy. Because you can't say that he touched him with yodov or something similar to yodov.
So one second, then I have a question.
Yeah.
If he does it from his mouth, we said previously, Rava said that the beginning of the mouth is considered not Beis HaStarim.
No, Rava didn't say that. Rava said it is, because the whole thing is considered Beis HaStarim. We said, no, Abaya said it's Balua. Yeah, Rava had agreed it's Beis HaStarim. So yes, the same thing would also apply if the guy had the stick in his mouth and pushes somebody with that.
So it's example where you have him push, he wouldn't be coming. What was that example?
That's what we're talking about. The Zav has a stick that he's holding in the crook of his elbow, for example.
The
Zav is the one who's doing the pushing, using the stick. The other person is not Tommy coming. But the Tahar person, right. But the difference is, if the Tahar person pushes him, it's true that Tumas Beis HaStarim is not Metameh, but Here, the tumah itself is not in beis hasodim. You don't find you have a usual concept that you have a usual concept that if a tahor person moves a zov, he also becomes tumah. And there you don't have anything that it says v'yodov. There you don't have anything that says that it has to be with an exposed area of his body. So therefore the tahor person becomes tumah even though he was holding it in his elbow. It's a special limud that applies when the zav is moving things, but not when a tahor person is moving things. Rashi, by the way, mentions the loy shota famayim. He didn't wash his hands. That Rashi says over here in Chulin that we learn something else from that. That's where we learn the concept of netilas yadayim, washing your hands before you eat. Tosfos over there disagrees and says it's not a real limud. It's only an asmachta. The whole concept of washing for food is a din d'rabbanon, in these words, lo shalta famayim. Okay, Rashi brings another explanation over here, which though he rejects. Well, the original concept was for truma, and then we learned in cholin mishum srat truma, because people can easily confuse truma with cholin, therefore the chachamim made the takana that you have to wash the cholin as well. Okay, Rashi brings another explanation over here and rejects it, says b'shibushu, it's a mistake, that the difference between the zav moving somebody with a stick that he's holding in his elbow versus the other person moving the zav with a stick that he's holding in his elbow, Rashi brings a second explanation that the difference is that in the case where the tahor person had the stick in his elbow and moved the zav with it, the reason is because it touched the outside areas of the zav's body. So therefore, the stick becomes tamei from the zav, and then it's becoming the tahor. And then with the zav moving the other person, it would be the other way around. Rashi mentions a few reasons why he can't accept that explanation. One of them is because a stick is only a pshute clay eight, it's not mekabel tumah in the first place. Even if you're going to say it's a hollow stick, it doesn't have the power to be metame the tahor person because the
hollow.
We're not talking about a natural hollow. There you have a Mishnah Kalim, I think it is, that talks about that only if you deliberately hollowed it out. Let's say you have a bamboo stick is hollow, but it usually has like this white fibrous stuff inside it. Besides that's true, the separation, but besides that, even in each of the segments, you have this white fibrous stuff. If you take that out, then you're making it into a keli, then it'll be makabel truma, but not before that.
But an old bamboo that has been cut, usually that stuff
Okay, then maybe if you cut it and you make it or you shape it in order to make it a keli, that would be different. But the point is that but even let's say over here, so Rashi says, even if let's say it was a hollow stick so it has a base kibble, but you can't say that it's going to be tomei from the zav and then be the time of the person because the stick only becomes a rishon l'truma and it can't be the time of the person. So Rashi says that whole explanation is shibush, it's a mistake. So the correct explanation is the first one, that the difference is that when it comes to a zav moving somebody, we have the words v'yiga b'yazav v'yodav, that he has to be touching the other person with something that's similar to his hands, namely that it's exposed, as opposed to, for example, his elbow, as opposed to when the other person moves the zav, you don't have any such dispensation. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah. So that's the bottom line. We do have this concept of tumas beis hasodim. You do have, though, a person can be tamei from beis hasodim if he carries something in beis hasodim, and that's also, therefore, why. So if the person is moving the zav with a stick, therefore he's tamei, because even if he were to carry the zav himself in the crook of his elbow, he'd still be tamei from masa. From carrying him, for the same reason we said, therefore, that the woman's beis hasodim, the beis hasodim in the throat or whatever, the person is still tamei from masa with the nevela is there, and we said also if the beis hasodim are stuck into an oven or other kli cheres, then the kli cheres is tamei because then you don't say it's not toich, it's not a keli inside a keli. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Avala Zavu Balkari en Matamin Chola, we said unlike a woman, unlike a Nidor or Zavo or what have you, who is Tomei as soon as the blood goes into the Bayis Achitzen, even though it's still inside her body. We said on the other hand, and we said according to the Chachamim also the same is true of Prelat Shechla Sera. On the other hand, the Mishnah had said, Avala Zavu Balkari en Matamin Chola, a zav or a balkeri don't become tamei unless the actual ziva or shichlas zera actually leaves their body. So how do we know that? Zav dichtiv ki zav mibesare. The pasuk says if he has an emission from his flesh, meaning actually zav mibesare, he only becomes tamei if the zav comes out of his flesh, only if it actually exits his body. Balkeri, where we know the same is true of Balkeri, Dichtiv, Ishki Seitz in the Menor Shechvas Zara. The Pasuk says, if Shechvas Zara comes out of a man. So therefore, again, it has to come out in order to be Matamim. As long as it's inside his body, then it's not Matamim. And therefore, we said in the Mishnah, "Hoya oichu b'tshurim over here,
Mishnah."
Mibzare, meaning from his flesh, meaning it has to actually come out of his flesh. Yeah. Okay. Then we said, "Hoya for that reason, hoya oichu b'tshurim over here, Mishnah." We said, suppose a kohen is eating truma, and all of a sudden he feels that shechvas zera is about to come out, nizdazu evara, he feels that he's trembling, about to ejaculate. Then he said he should hold on to his aver and swallow the truma, because that way he'll prevent the shechvas zera from coming out until he swallowed the truma. So the question is, what do you mean oiches? What do you mean he's allowed to hold on to his aver? We learned this in the second parak. V'altanya, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm called oiches v'amo mashkin, kila maybe mabul la'olam. Didn't Rabbi Eliezer say that if a person holds on to his aver and urinates, like he's bringing a mabul to the world, because he's going to cause himself to be moshi shechvas zera l'vatala? And that was one of the averas that actually caused the mabul. Omer Abai, the makos over. So Abai says, you're right, on Mishnah, therefore, must be talking about where he's holding it using a thick cloth. So a thick cloth is not gonna make him feel sensation, and therefore it's not gonna cause him to be motizah. Rava Amar Afilu Tema B'Matla Siraka. Rava says you could even be talking about it uses a softer cloth, which could therefore warm up the aver and cause. But Kibben the Ocker. Once the Shechvas Zera is already on the way out of its body, it's already on the way out. So therefore, there's nothing more. It's too late to already cause anything. Re Abaya. What is Abaya answer to that? He says, still I say. There, Abaya, and what does Abaya answer to that? He says, okay. But Abaya Chaya, she still has a chash duma alfila istufi. Still, maybe by holding on with a soft cloth, for example, it might cause more shechvas zera is going to come out. Like this, there would have been a smaller amount, and like this, by stimulating himself more, right. He's like. No, but the point is that the more serious that is apparently. I'll be kabbalah. Yeah, but no, we're also talking about the concept of moitzi zera l'vatala. We're not just talking about the fact that he becomes tamei. We're also talking about the ruchniyistik truma that's brought into the world through it. Apparently, the more there is, the greater the truma. You know, you have the Alter Rebbe talks about in Perek Zayin and Tanya. It's brought in many different svarim of kabbalah and musar and whatever that they have. The Zohar talks about that basically the clippers feed off the wasted shechvas zera. So like the more of it there is, that's why you have, by the way, in Krishma Shalomitza, you have right before Mafil, you have a two line thing, a piece of a kit for whatever. Basically you're saying that in case there's any wasted shechvas zera from this that I'm gonna be with my wife, then I want the clippers to stay out of it and not interfere and not try to feed off it. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so Abaya is still concerned that there might be more. Rava, what does Rava say? He's not concerned about any extra being added. Once it's coming out, and it doesn't really make a difference. So therefore, he doesn't care if he's using a soft clear. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? How can he not be choshish? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa. L'maza joima, what is this like? This that a person is able to stimulate himself again and again and cause zera to come out again and again. L'maza joima, l'noisen es v'ayin. It's like when a person puts his finger in his eye, shekoz man she es v'ayin, as long as the finger is in the eye, minabas v'chazeris minabas. It's going to keep on tears, producing more and more tears. So the same thing here, the more he stimulates, the more it's going to come.
There's no prohibition in producing tears.
No, of course not. We're just using that as an example. Yeah. We're using that as an example. Like you don't just say that, you know, the eye reacts to the finger once and produces tears and then that's that. No, it keeps on reacting. So the same thing over here, yeah. So what would Rava answer? Okay, true. A person, of course, could produce shechvas zera again and again, particularly when they're younger. But kol ichmumi v'hadu ichmumi b'shaita lo shchiach, that he should be stimulated and to produce zera, and then again, very quickly, be able to so quickly after the previous one, to be able to right away be stimulated again b'shaita in such a short time. Lo shchiach is a very uncommon thing, and therefore Rav is not worried about it. Okay. More on this topic of shechvas zera. Omer Shmuel. Kol shechvas zera she'ein kol gufoy marvish ba ein matam. If shechvas zera comes out of a person and he doesn't feel it in his whole body, like his whole body is not shaking from it, ein matam. such shechvas zera is not matami. My time of shechvas zera, Amar Rachmana, because the pasuk says, the pasuk uses the expression shechvas zera, b'ru'uya lahazriya. So it has to be that it's capable of fertilizing. And if it came out without his whole body having hagasha of it, then it's not viable. Well, it means either it's a sickness, or it means it's not viable. It means that it's not normal zera, and it's not viable. It's not going to be able to produce a baby. Mace, the Gemara says, what do you mean? I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Mikvah, Hoya Maharer Balayla, if a person was having hirhurim, was having thoughts, that are the stimulating thoughts at night, and then in the morning he woke up and found that his aver is warm, stimulated, Tomei. Then he's Tomei, because it's very possible that Keri came out. Now, what do you mean? It was in the middle of the night, he dreamt, he didn't have Hagosha, his whole body didn't feel it. We're assuming...
Yeah, but
the answer is, so Rav Huna explains, we're not just talking about that he was having stimulating dreams. We're talking about he actually had a dream where he's having relations. When you have relations, there's always havgasha. Shechazera comes out, there's always, you feel it in your whole body. So therefore, yes. Yeah, so therefore, so he dreamt it, and therefore that's considered the dreaming itself. Of it's considered the havgasha. Lishnachrina, another version, is Amashmul, kol shechvasera she'ena yorek kecheitz ena matam. The second version is that any shechvasera that doesn't shoot out like an arrow, in other words, that sort of dribbles out, ena matame. It's not matame because, again, if it doesn't shoot out, then it's not viable. Which you have, that second concept, the Gemara mentions in a few other places in Chas. You have, for example, in Yevamos, you have a whole sugya over there about a krus shach or psua daka. You have the various people who have injuries to their genitals and whatever, where part of the issue is that the shechvas zera doesn't come out normally. It doesn't shoot out the way it normally would. It dribbles out.
Yeah,
he can't have children, and he's also to marry a regular Jewish woman, only a gioras or mamzeres or what have you.
Why mamzeres is not?
Because of gioras or mamzeres. Because the pasuk says lo yavi p'tzua dako krus shach is a kal Hashem. Kal Hashem means the group of Jews who are allowed to freely intermarry, namely Kohenim, Levim, and Yisrael. So not gerim and not mamzeres. Because for example, a Kohen can't marry a gioras. So therefore, they're not considered part of Kal Hashem.
They're not considered part of Kal Hashem.
Well, I mean, they're part of the Jewish people, obviously, but as far as this definition of Kal Hashem, lo yovei amoni umayovei b'Kal Hashem, lo yovei mamzer b'Kal Hashem, etc. Kal Hashem means only regular Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim, not Gerim, not Avodim Mishachrorim, not Mamzerim, etc.
Practically, what does it mean,
the Kalashan? That's what it means. In other words, the Krus Shachor, Ptura Daka, is not allowed to marry a regular Bas Koyan, Bas Levi, or Bas Yisrael. He can marry a Giyotis, he can marry a Freed Shifcha, he can marry a Mamzeres. Where did you see that we're not allowed to marry a Giyotis? A Koyan is not allowed to marry a Giyotis. A Koyan is not allowed to marry a Giyotis. Because of that, Gerim are not called Kalashan, because Koyanim cannot freely intermarry with Gerim.
In the
daytime, yeah.
I know we learned it in Kiddush.
Yeah, no, but also in the daytime kollel that they have over here, where they're learning Kiddush. And then, yeah, No, we didn't have a focus on this particular point. Okay. Anyway, let's go on.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Okay. So the question is, okay, so we have two versions of what Shmuel said. One is that he has to feel it with his whole body, and the other one is it has to be Yoreh Kachet. So the question.
If he has,
the pashtus when it comes out, it's yoreh
kachet. You don't know what happened.
No, but you would assume that you're. So the question is, my ikka ben high lishna but lahai lishna. So what's the actual nafkamina between the two lishonas? The answer is ikka ben high nek rabahu gosha for yotta shalai bahu gosha. Suppose that it started coming out from its place. It was uprooted from its place. It started coming out of the duct. With Haugasha, and then the Yot to Shalaiba Haugasha, and then later on, it actually came out of his body without Haugasha. So he fell to Haugasha when it started, but then when it actually came out, it wasn't Yoreh Kachet, it kind of dribbled out.
So according to the
first Lashon, there was Haugasha, therefore it's Matame. According to the second Lashon, it wasn't Yoreh Kachet, it didn't shoot out like an arrow, therefore it's not Matame. So the Gemara says, Milsit Pshita Leila Shmuel Mibori Leila Rava. Now, actually, we should realize then this detail that Shmuel knows for a fact this that we're saying that there's a difference whether there's Hagdasha or not. Or actually, this that we just said, the Nafkamina between these things, if it was Nekra Hagdasha, the Yata Shalai Hagdasha, in a later generation, Rava was uncertain about that point. Namely, the Bari Rava, because Rava asked exactly that question. Nekra Hagdasha, the Yata Shalai Hagdasha Mahu. Exactly that. The person felt it in his whole body, but then eventually it dribbled out. It didn't come out. So what is it? Is it Matame or not? So Toshma, so let's try to prove from that same, a different part of that same Mishnah in Mikvos, that says, Balkeri Shetobo Velehito Mayim, a Balkeri who goes to Tovel, but he didn't urinate before he Toveled, Lichshayato Mayim Tomei. Later on, when he urinates, he's going to be Tomei, because there's going to be some of the Keri left over. Because what happens when Shechva Zera comes out and a person ejaculates, not necessarily does all of it come out. You have usually most of it comes out, but there's still a little bit left inside. And later on, now when he urinates, it's coming out through the same tube after all, so it's coming out through the urethra. So now the rest of the Shechva Zera comes out with it and he's coming again. So therefore, he has to urinate before he goes to the mikvah. Actually, we learned in Cholin that there's a difference in that regard. We said there's a difference in that regard whether he's young or old. We said when he's young, then his body has the power to expel all the Shechva Zera. When he's old, then not necessarily. We said there, young and old doesn't necessarily mean in age. It means in how strong his body is. We had a Gemara over there that mentioned if he's able to stand on one foot and tie and untie his shoe, then he's considered young for that purpose, even if he's 80 years old. The point is, in other words, even a person could be 20 years old, but he doesn't have the ability, he's not strong enough to be able to do that kind of thing, then we consider that he's not strong enough for his body to expel all the Shechva Zera. That doesn't have a disease necessarily, but he doesn't have strong muscles, whatever.
Yeah, that's what we learned when it comes to the Kohanim, they would do things on one foot, whatever it is, actually we touched on.
I don't think we mentioned this point over there, but I don't know.
Dance and do things on one foot.
No, it doesn't say. No, that's something else. They did kid. Yeah, they did kid. Okay, they had strength for that, right? Okay, anyway, getting back over here. So we see there now when these bits of Shechva Zera come out, there's no Hagdasha. They just come out while he's urinating, and we're still saying he's coming. But obviously, therefore, the answer is yes, because they were produced by his body with Hagdasha, then therefore it doesn't matter if they come out to like the Hagdasha.
This is a proof to the
second possibility that he is coming. The answer is not necessarily, because shiny hostel the rub of Hagdasha, not like it's different over there, because most of the Zera came out with Hagdasha. He actually felt it when it was coming out, and most of it was Yerukachet. Yeah, okay, you have little bits and pieces of it left. That we're not worried about, because we still say once most of it came out, then the little bits that are left are also considered, doesn't matter. They're also fruitful. So therefore, it would affect him. That's what the Mishnah is saying. It would affect him. Therefore, he has to make sure to go to the bathroom before he goes to the mikvah. Because otherwise, Because since most of it came by Hagdasha and was Yoda Kachet, so even the little bits that are left are going to be still Mimitame. They themselves are not Yoda Kachet, but they would have been together with the rest of it, just that his body wasn't strong enough to expel all of it. So therefore you have to urinate, which therefore gets all of it out before he goes to the mikvah. That's the point. Okay.
But it's not considered Benastarim, it's inside his body.
When it comes out, it's going to be Mimitame.
The rest.
No, that's what I'm talking about. But eventually, the rest of that shit, but as long as it's in his body, fine. But as soon as it comes out, the next time he urinates, it's going to be the time of him all over again. That's the point.
Well, it's just urine anymore.
Yeah.
It's not considered part of, mixed up in those.
No.
In urine?
No, it's no reason to consider it's bottle. Okay. Lishna Achrina. Another version of this whole discussion goes like this. Omer Shmuel, kol shechva zera she'ena yore kecheit ena mazdrach. The second version is that we're saying that Shmuel says any Shechva Zera that's not Yoreh Kecheit is not able to fertilize. In other words, Izru Yehud Eloi Mezara, it's not able to fertilize a woman, Hotamuya Metamya. But according to the second version, even though it wasn't Yoreh Kecheit, even though it just dribbled out, it's still Metamya. Why? Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Ki yiyah b'cha ish asher lo yiyah tar mikre. The Pasuk says, if you have among you a person who is not tar because of an accidental emission, meaning, afilu keri ba'olam, even if it's just an accidental thing, even if it just dribbles out, it's enough to make him tar. Okay. So that's that. So according to that second version, then it would be Matame even though it dribbled out. Okay. Boyrova, since we mentioned this topic about that a person was a Balkeri, and then he went to the mikveh, and then afterwards we're saying the next time he urinates, then if any of the Shechva Zera comes out with it, then he's going to be Tomei again. So let's ask a case like this. Oivit kichavim shehiro. Suppose you have a goy who had a hiro, and Shechva Zera started to be produced. It didn't actually come out yet, but it's already starting to come out. The yorad v'tovol, and then he went to tovol for his gerus. And then that now afterwards the keri comes out. Now we're not even talking about the leftover. Now we're not even talking about the leftover that might come out with his urine later. Now we're talking about the entire keri because his gerus changes his status. So the entire ejaculation of Shechva Zera was ready to come out before he toiled, but it only actually came out after he toiled.
1 second. To become a ger by going to the mikveh, you have to be tahor. Otherwise,
no. But the point of the question is: is this Shechva Zera matami? And if you go according to when it started to be produced and come out, then from its original place. Listen, because the question is, we said before there's nekra and there's yasa. There's nekra when it's emitted by his testicles, and then there's yasa when it actually comes out of his body. Now here, the nekra took place while he was still a goy. And as a goy, a shechva zera is not matame. We learned in the previous perek. In fact, we learned that even we had the whole concept that goyim are considered like zovim. We said that even we had machlokas v'shamay and v'tilul in that regard. But we said everybody, even v'tilul who's machmir over there, agreed that the keri, that the shechva zera of a goy is not matame. Because we said the chachamim needed to make a distinction over there, so that we shouldn't think that a goy is tomei on a deraisa. So the shechva zera of a goy is not matame. So if you go according to Akira, when it started coming out of his testicles, hanimilu l'chumra, maybe you would say, and we said before, we asked before what happens if that happened by Hagosha and then it dribbled out, shaloi by Hagosha. We said that maybe the possibility is we go according to nekra, we go according to when it started coming out, even before it actually leaves his body, and therefore the fact that it was produced by Hagosha is good enough to be matame. But over here, that took place while he was a goy. So therefore, hani milu l'chumra. When would we say we go according to the akira? That's when it results in a chumra. But even though later on there was no Hagosha, even though it wasn't yoda kheit, when it came out, nevertheless it's matame because of the original Hagosha. Abel hachad l'kula l'yamrinim. Here, we're going according to the akira would result in a kula. Because we would say that he was a goy, and then it's not matame. So maybe we don't say that. Maybe there's no difference. And the answer is teku. So therefore we have to be machmir on it.
It's strange that that's a goy. From the time the toiling and until it comes out, it doesn't happen so quick.
Well, it could be just a few seconds. Well, maybe. But
yesterday or the day before, you said that it's only when it comes out that it's considered tall.
Okay, so in this case, it came out.
The gear would be effective only when it comes out.
That's fine. So, okay.
But
the Akira still took place while he was a goy.
Right.
So that's the question. So if we were to say we go according to the Akira, usually that results in a Chumra, even though the Akira took place by Hagosha, and later on the Yitzia took place, it was not Yoda Tuchet, and there was no Hagosha, no nothing, and we still say the person is Tomei. But here, if we go according to the Akira, if we say that when it was produced by his testicles, then he was a goy, then we would be Mekel, and we would say that Zera is not the Tomei, even once it actually comes out of his body. So that's the question. So we have to be Machmir. Boy Rava has a similar question. Zava Shaneku Memiragla, a similar question. What happens to Zava where her urine was nectar? It starts coming out of the bladder, but it didn't come all the way out of the body, the yod of a tovla, and then she went and toiled, and then later on, after she came out of the mikveh, then she urinated. Now, if again, the urine of a Zava is an avatoma, but once she toiled, then she's not a Zava anymore. So you have the same question. Mahu, im tim saloima boser akira azinan. You may say that usually you would go according to akira, but hani mili shechvas zera zolay matim nochis la. The difference is maybe when we say that you go according to the akira only when it comes to shechvas zera, because once shechvas zera is starting to come out, you can't hold it back. So therefore, in effect, the akira is the more important part of the process. Yes, eventually it has to come out, but the coming out is like a secondary thing because it's an automatic reflex.
Bacteria is when it
starts. Bacteria is when it starts moving from the testicles, right? So once that happens, you can't really hold it back. So it's an automatic thing. So yeah, but when it comes to urine, the mussy nokila, you're able to hold it in. She's able to clench her muscles and hold it in. Why? Maybe the bacteria is not considered such an important thing. So therefore it's not metame on the grounds that it was nectar, that it started moving while she was still a zava. Or again, maybe there's no difference. And again, take it. Okay. A third question. Boy rava, a vedes kechavim zava shenekru meimiragla. Let's talk now about a goita. We learned in the previous parak that the chachamim made a takana that all goyim are considered like zavim and all goyish women are considered like zavim. So now her urine is tamei on a drabanan level for the same reason, because the urine of an actual zava is tamei on a daraisa level, so the urine of a zava drabanan is tamei on a drabanan level. So also shenekru meimiragla. So let's say again that her meiraglayim, that her urine started moving, the yod of a tavla, and then she went and tovled to become a giyurus, and then afterwards she urinated. Mahu, what do we say? Is that urine matami? If you say that ordinarily we go according to Akira, afagab the mati nakal. Means according to Akira. And we would say, Afagab the Mati Nokit Lahu. And we would say not only when it comes to Shechvat Zera, where once the Akira takes place, you can't hold it back, but even with urine, where once the Akira takes place, you could hold it back, but still, Hani Mili Yisraelis. Maybe you would still say that concept only applies to a Jewish woman, the Tmeya Doraisa, where after all, when she was a Zava, her urine was Matame on a Doraisa level. But a goyish woman, where the whole concept that her urine is tamei in the first place is only the rabbanon, loy, maybe we wouldn't say that. Maybe we would go lakula and not go according to the akira. We would go according to when it actually came out, and at that point she was ready to. Maybe we say even there, there's no difference. And again, take. In this particular case, this one, the Aruch HaNer explains that the Rambam is meikel on this one because here the whole initial tumah is only derabanan. The previous two cases, the basic tumah is daraisa. The tumah of shechvas dera is daraisa. The tumah of the urine of a Jewish zava is also daraisa. But over here, because the whole concept that the urine of a goyish woman is matame is only derabanan, then therefore we can be mekel.
It's incredible that deraisa, a Jewish woman is matame and a goyish woman is not.
No difference, for example, than the fact that a live animal is not able to be matame. So the whole concept of tumah v'tahara midaraisa applies only to Jews. You have a general concept. The more something is able to become kaddish, the more it's susceptible to tumah, because zelo maseo tzarekim. There's a reason why, for example, you have levels of tumah that apply to tumah and to kaddishim that don't apply to cholin. There's a reason why you have to have higher levels of kedusha in the Beit Mikdash, for example, than you do elsewhere. So by the same token, Jews who are able to be a kaddish on a very high level are also able to become tumah. Goyim, who are not able to have that high level of kedusha, are not able to have tumah on a daraisa level. We said in the Mishnah, umitamin b'chol shehem. We said that all of these various emissions, zoiv and shechvas zera and whatever, are all mitame with even the smallest amount. So, omer Shmuel, zov tzorech kachasimas pi'ama. So Shmuel says, when it comes to a zov, it's not necessarily like that. You need, in order for him to be tame, you have to have enough emission to actually close up the hole of the ama, the hole at the end of the aver, the urethra.
How much do you need?
Whatever it is, I don't know. However much it needs, however much the size of the hole is. Shenema oy hechtim b'sarim yizor. Because the pasuk says the pasuk describes that his flesh, meaning his aver, is stopped up from his zoid. So only if it's stopped up, only then is it considered zoid. Tosfos, by the way, earlier in the Masechta discusses the possibility that maybe what Shmuel means is he's not talking about an actual size, he's not talking about an actual amount of zoiv, he's actually talking about at what point is it metame, only when it actually reaches the pia ama, only when it actually reaches the hole over there. So the question is, v'hanan tanan metamin b'chol shehein, we said in the Mishnah it's metame with even the tiniest amount, so even if it's not chlimas pia ama, The answer is Huda Amakid of Nasan. The answer is, yes, that's true, but Shmuel can't contradict the Mishnah, but he's following the opinion of Rav Nasan. The Tanya, as we learn in Abraisa, Rav Nasan, I remember Shmuel, Rishmol, Zav Tzarech Kachasim Es Piyama, V'loi Ha'idilai, the other Chachamim did not agree with him. However, still, there is a Machloikas Tanayim, so therefore Shmuel is entitled to pick,
one
so therefore
side.
Shmuel is entitled to pick one side, yes. Okay. So the question is, my time is Rabbi Shmuel. Why indeed does Rabbi Shmuel say that you need that minimum amount? The reason is, we just said, because the pasuk says, in fact, by the way, Mephoshim asked, why did Shmuel just say that I hold the halacha is like Rabbi Nathan, I'm like Rabbi Shmuel? Why do you have to repeat the whole point? So they say maybe because this braisa was not well known. So if he just said the halacha is like Rabbi Nathan, then nobody would know what he's talking about. So you have to clarify. Okay. Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say, Hahumi boile lach matame ve'en matame yomish. They say we learn a different din from that, that the ziba is only matame when it's liquid, not when it's dry. Hechtim and plum, because when it's dry, it's not able to seal up the piyama, it'll fall right up. So therefore, it's only matame when it's liquid. We learn that from this part. Virabishmol. I don't know if it's dry enough to be liquid. Then if it's liquid, if it's enough to be able to stick,
it,
and to be able to
stick. Difference if you put it in liquid, it stays the way it is. And
no. So actually, we learned before about blood of zava, and we're going to learn about it in more detail later in the Masechta, that blood of a zava and a number of other things, even though we say certain things, actually, I shouldn't say blood of a zava, certain secretions from a zava or what have you are matame only when they're liquid, not when they're dry, but we're going to learn later in the Masechta that if you're able to put them in warm water and they become liquid, they become flesh again, then they're still matame. A sheriff is another example of that. So over here, what is it? A sheretz is another example. You have a dry sheretz, for example, a dry dead sheretz isn't matame. Same thing. If you're able to put it in, not dissolve, just the opposite. If you put it in water and it's not so dry, it's still able to become fresh looking again. It's able to reabsorb. Then it's still matame. So over here, what is it? Is it matame? So I think you have the same thing. I think it's also that it's matame only that it's matame only when it's yeah. But Amma mentions that same thing that yobish ain't matame, but if you could put it in warm water, mess less, and it'll go back to its original consistency, then it's still matame. Okay, fine. But the point is, the Chachamim are saying if it's completely dry beyond that stage, then it's not matame. That we learn from the words oheches and matare. So therefore, we don't have it available to teach. Hechtim means that it's sealed up. And it was liquid enough to be able to seal it up. So therefore, we don't have it available to teach us about an amount. Vera Bishmol, what does Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He says, Ahume Ror Naska. Sure, but I agree to that din. But we learn that from the word that the pasuk says, Ror Besorei Es Zoyv. Ror, Rashi explains, is related to the word rir, which means saliva. So it means it has to be liquid like saliva. So from that we see that it has to be liquid. I don't need hechtim besorei for that. V'rabbanan, what are the rabbanan answer to that? They say the word ror is not teaching us that it has to be liquid. Hahula minyana hudasa. That word ror is just part of the sequence in the pasuk that teaches us that there need to be three ra'iyas to be mechayev and a korban. Namely, the you have like this. The pasuk goes like this. The pasuk says this will be his tumah with his ziva. Ror besorei es zoyvoi, if his flesh is liquidy with his ziv, or hechtim besorei mezoyvoi, or his organ is stopped up, where it's stopped up with the zoyv, tumasehi, then he's tumah. So three times in that pasuk you have the shorish zov. Vezoytia tumasa bezoyvoi, ror besorei es zoyvoi, or hechtim besorei mezoyvoi. That's where we learn. So zoyve chodor ror besore tre es zoyve tlas limit al zov baal sholosh riyas shachay the carbon. So we learn from that that a person has ziva three times, then it makes him chayiv and a carbon. And when the pasuk says oy hechtim besore mi zoyve tomei. Also, then, when the pasuk says, "Or his flesh is stopped, his organ is stopped up from his zoyv, then he's tamei." And what is the word "mi zoyv"? It means "mikzas zoyv tamei." Even only a part of zoyv is enough to make him tamei. Limit al zov bal shtei riyas from a tamei mishka v'moshe. From there, we learn that if he only had two riyas, that he's not bringing a korban, but he is still a zov as far as he's matame anything that he sits on or lies on or whatever. So that we learn from the word "mi." So the fact that he has in a day, that's true, but that's a different thing. We're not talking about that. But the point is, in other words, there's a difference, as we've learned before, between a Zav Bal Shtei Re'ias and Zav Bal Shalosh Re'ias. A Zav, both of them are equally Tomei. Both of them are Matan and Mishkav Moshav. Both of them we have the Tumas Hesif that we talked about before on Amud Aleph. The only difference is if he had two Re'ias, he doesn't bring a Korban, and if he had three Re'ias, he does. So the three we learn from the three times Zovo that it says in the Pasuk, and the two times we learn because it says Mi Zovo. Three times to bring a korban. Two times mi zovo still tum also he still has the same degree of tuma. He just doesn't bring a korban.
And
he brings a korban with three.
And the two we learn is
from mi zovo. It means part of a zovo. Yeah, means part of the three. So therefore, so the Chacham said we don't have the word ror available to teach us that it has to be liquid. So therefore, we have to learn that from Hechtim. Okay, so where does Rabbi Shmuel learn the count of two and three, respectively? The answer is Nachkala Midir Rabbi Simoi. He learns it from what Rabbi Simoi says. The Tanya Rabbi Simoi, Mona HaKosuf Shtayim V'Karei Tomei, Sholesh V'Karei Tomei. You have two psukim back to back that one of them mentions two times Zoiv and one of them mentions three times Zoiv, and each time it says Tomei. You have like this. Supposing by Dabar Shalom Moshe V'Alai Yom Leimer, what's the Lashon? I can't remember it.
Which pasuk?
It's in Parshas. It's in Parshas Mitzrayim here. Dabro of nature of Amar Tamalei. Ish tiyeh zov mibesoroi zovo tomehu. So you see that there you have in the pasuk twice it uses the shortest zov. He is zov mibsaray, zovoi tomehu. So after two times zov, it says the word tomei. And then you have a pasuk where it says three times zov, and it says tomei, the pasuk that we just quoted. The zov tiyeh tumasei bezovoi, ror besaray es zovoi, yehechtem besaray mizovoi, tumasei. So one says two, and one says two, and one says three. Okay, it's a shtayim l'tumah, v'sholosh l'korban. So therefore, that teaches us that two times is enough to make him tomei as a zov, and three times is needed to make him a korban. So Rabbi Shmuel says I don't need the words ayhechtim besore mizoyver for it. So therefore I can say that or I don't mean ror besore mizoyver for that. So therefore I can say it teaches us that it has to be liquid. Okay. So the question is, ulaman the nafkale tavayu mizoy tia tumasa mizoyver. Ish ki yezov mizore my oven, right? So what are the chachamim doing with the first pasuk? Ish ki yezov mizore. If they say we're not learning the two times from that pasuk, we're learning it from mizoyver. So what are they using the first pasuk? The answer is Mibarilei Achigeitzim Mibsorei Zoyvoi. Achigeitzim Mibsorei. They say that's where we learn the concept that it's only Matana once it comes out of his body. Because Ishish Ki Yezov Mibsorei. Only when it comes out of his bottle, only then is it Matana.
What is it?
Rabbi Shmuel had used the Pasuk Odom Ki Yezov Mibsorei to say that if he twice Ziva makes him Tomer. So it says twice in that Pasuk Zov and then finishes off Tomasa. The Chachamim say, no, we're learning from that pasuk that it says mibisorei, meaning he's only becoming a zov if it comes out mibisorei, if it comes out of him, not while it's still inside his body. And tomei lomali, and why does the pasuk finish off with tomei, according to them? Limit ala zov shu tomei. That teaches us the actual drops of zov themselves are tomei if a person touches it. Okay, so that's that. So Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim have their different ways of darshaning from the psukim. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says that you need a minimum amount. You need hechtim besaroi, and the Chachamim say you don't need that because they use hechtim besaroi. They use hechtim besaroi to teach us that it has to be liquid. And therefore, and they go back and forth over there. And therefore, the bottom line is the Chachamim say that it doesn't have to be chachsin of piyama. It can be any tiny amount in the psukim. And the halacha is like this. Yes, the chama machmir and the halacha is like this.
As usual.